T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Very clear through his actions that if things don't go his way, he's stepping back. Now, when it comes to the money, he'll show up, but he might not give you it all. You remember, he was there week 17 for the Pittsburgh game, but he wasn't playing in week 17 of the Pittsburgh game. He had the fur coat on and he was on the sidelines. You knew the risk coming into it. You can't afford to let this blow up, so you got to support him. The biggest concern with all of this is not the frostbite, okay? It's not the helmet. It's what's next. And then what's next after that. And then what's next after that? You don't have a contract out for 2 years. You can get out of this after 2 seasons. It'll be about a 2-year deal worth somewhere around $33, $34 million, and then you can get out with about $333,000 of dead cap money. But this is not going to end, all right? This is what's called a pattern. Stop trying to assume this is a one-off. He had the issue in Pittsburgh. Then he forced his way out. Then he got to Oakland, and he had the frostbite issue. And maybe that's not his fault, like Gruden says. Okay, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but now it's a helmet issue. Do we think that after this is resolved, that's it? It's done? He's going to be a team guy? No. There's going to be the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing after that. T.O. was a great talent, too, but there was a problem in San Francisco. Then he went to Philly, and what happened? There was a problem in Philly. Then he went to Dallas, and what happened? There's a problem in Dallas, and then Buffalo, and then Cincinnati. You wake up in the morning, you run into a jerk. At the end of the day, you ran into a jerk. You wake up in the morning, you run into jerks all day. Guess what? You're the jerk. That's the problem. And that's what the Raiders are dealing with right now. You have to coddle him because he's part of the new generation where everywhere he goes, everyone is telling him how awesome he is. Every time he opens his phone, his Instagram is filled with likes and comments and people supporting him and telling him how wonderful he is. Every time he goes to Twitter, he gets that support. This is the danger of social media. Every time you do that and you see all those likes and those comments, you get those dopamine hits and then you become addicted to it. Those devices, those platforms are designed to addict you. So now every time he looks at his phone, he's getting these dopamine hits for how wonderful he is. And he shows up in the real world and it's, hey, we need you to go to work. Well, I'm upset. I don't like this helmet. It's slightly different than the one I prefer. I'm not going to use this new one. And everywhere in his life, they've acquiesced. He was the only guy that ever broke the Steelers. The Steelers don't break in situations like that. They gave up. They broke. They traded him for a 3 and a 5. All right, that's everything you need to know. One of the best players in football, voted on by his peers as the best receiver in the game in the NFL's top 100, as one of the top 10 players in the NFL, they gave him up for a 3 and a 5 in his prime.
Yeah.
That tells you what you need to know. So Gruden said exactly what Gruden had to say because he has no other options. You have to coddle him, and he comes first. Otherwise, that's it. He might suit up, but he ain't going to show out.
That's very strong and very well said. You're in a situation, though, where you're John Gruden, you have to be careful because of the fact, if you aren't careful, what would he do to your team? If the rest of the guys see that this guy, he's running it, and they see that there is a new set of rules, I'm telling you, you start to lose your team. And you saw Tomlin, he was losing his team. What happened with the running back? You think about other guys there. You look at, he wanted out. You start to have one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. You think about what's starting to happen. People start seeing that happen. You hear leaks. You heard a leak that the guy's looking at his cell phone, looking at his bank account. Where'd that come from? Didn't come from a coach. Came from a player, coach. So it came from someone with inside saying, wow, this is the type of behavior that's allowed. Now they see him at practice, not showing. So guys are looking, and you know what? They're not thinking about football. They're thinking about what this guy's getting away with. So now on the water break, without by the water cooler, you say, man, you see, you heard I talked to Gruden. And now guys are starting to see that, and they're like, no, man. And you lose respect, too. So you have to be careful, but this is what you signed up for. The handwriting was on the wall. The guy is a hell of a talent, and I think there could be something even more. If I'm this regular organization, I make sure that I try to make maybe see if there's some help, some psychological help. Maybe there's something that needs to be done. Because the guy, when he's well, he's hell. But you got to look at this guy and say, wow, what's going on? If you're looking at a helmet, Joe, that's 10 years old, and you look at it, and here's the things that's going on with these helmets, and you look at it, and you're like, man, even though I'm used to something that's old, I was in that situation with my pads, shoulder pads, because I was used to them. But after they didn't pass the thing, I knew that you had to change. You can't just say, I'm keeping them anyway. you have to look at it and say, am I making the best decision? These things are not passing protocol. This stuff is getting old. So when you look at it like that, just process elimination, even though you might prefer that, you say, I'm going to change because this is the rules. And I, too, have to abide by the rules.
I think that it's just a case of a guy not wanting to play preseason games because you don't get paid for preseason, right? Or you do get paid, but it's a set, flat scale. It's not what he's going to make for the regular season.
But he
doesn't
have to play, though, Coach. If he told Gruden, Coach, I ain't playing, and I don't want to play preseason, I'm going to give you everything I got at practice, who says no? You know what I mean?
Nobody says no. But that's why when you look at the situation, how do you get severe frostbite from a cryogenic chamber? It couldn't have been the first time he went in there. And if it was, he would have been with some sort of an expert, you would assume. So how could that have happened to his feet if he really was geared up for his first chance as a Raider in preseason football and I'm a real team player? That wouldn't happen. And then this helmet thing is a whole separate issue. And if the helmet thing gets resolved, like Joe's saying, then he'll come, oh, maybe it's my mouthpiece. Yeah, I can't use this kind of mouthpiece. I can't play until I get the mouthpiece I want to have. And then you get to the first game of the year, and I bet you that all these little things are resolved. And like Joe was saying, he loves his money more than anything else, so he won't miss game checks. By the time the first week rolls around, all these little issues, they're going to subside.
Don't think. Just observe. Just observe them. And ask yourself this. What happens when someone tells him no? It happened in Pittsburgh. We saw the result. It's happening now with the helmet. Like, it's a helmet. It's a helmet. It's not that big of a deal. Like, this is called a minor blip of adversity that people have to overcome. Literally everyone else in the NFL has to deal with it. Everyone. Right. You highlighted two quarterbacks who you thought were getting away with it. They weren't. They weren't. They had to change, too. And for the people who are suggesting...
And they didn't want to, but they did.
Of course they didn't, but it's just that's the rule. Like, I would love it if I could just walk into a bank and just take all the money I wanted and then just walk out. I would do that every day, all day. I wouldn't come here. But guess what? I'm not allowed to do that or I will go to prison. So I don't rob banks every day. I don't. I follow that rule. I don't follow all. I wouldn't say that. Right. I follow that rule.
That's one
I'm not
you
robbing
follow.
Banks. But to the idea of signing a waiver, a lot of people, well, can't he just sign a waiver? It's complicated. Because if he signs a waiver that says, sure, anything that happens to me, I absolve the NFL, can you guarantee right now that he's in the right frame of mind? Can you guarantee that nothing has happened to him in the previous portion of his career where he's mentally competent to the point where he can sign that form fully knowing and understanding what he's signing? This is what happened with a lot of these loans that were being taken out by former players in the CTE lawsuit. A lot of players were part of the class action. And they were taking out loans from people as advancements on their payday. And they were signing it over at like 39, 40% interest rates. That's why everyone was so willing to line up to give these former players loans. Yeah, we'll loan you $200K. We'll loan you $100K. We'll loan you $50K. And they would just keep giving them out at 35, 40% interest rates so that when the class action lawsuit settled, these guys would be able to cash in like crazy. Turns out that all those guys who loaned that money out to the former players aren't going to be able to get any of their cash back, even the stuff they originally loaned. Because if all these guys are suffering from CTE, then the documents they signed taking the loan from you aren't necessarily valid because they didn't, quote, know what they were signing. So everyone ended up getting, guys ended up getting a lot of free money on that deal. That's something that no one's really reporting on, but that definitely happened. So that's one of those things. He's not going to be able to sign a waiver because the NFL is not going to feel confident with that.
They're not going to want to offer him a waiver anyway. Of all players, a guy who has been nothing but trouble in so many different ways, he's not getting that sort of a waiver. And the league's not going to extend that to any player because of what you said and also what it could mean on the back end. What if something were to happen and he were to die on the field wearing that helmet? You can't tell me that they're not going to bring a lawsuit anyway, no matter what waiver he may have signed.
It's too bad because the guy's a hell of a talent. I hope this guy can get it right mentally because this will be another sad case where a guy is out of the league, gone too soon because of different issues that he's dealing with. Because when he's well, the guy is absolutely amazing. I hope the Raiders the best and hopefully they can get this thing under control.
Stock up, stock down from preseason game number one and an interview with Kevin Mitchell all coming your way next. That's brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Hey, because there are rules in place, I'm not going to be robbing Fremont Bank. I might go in there and get myself dialed up with a checking account, but I'm not going to rob Fremont Bank because those are the rules. Here's Anna with what's coming up on the game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Stanford Healthcare. The 49ers' first preseason game is in the books, and Jolo and Dibs are breaking it all down. Who stood out in the game? We'll ask former Niner and analyst Ian Williams at 9:05. Niners reportedly acquired offensive lineman Sam Young after swing tackle Sean Coleman got hurt. Unfortunately, the injury bug keeps on biting, and the guys will get you up to date on all the injuries. Despite the Antonio Brown helmet drama, Raiders won their preseason matchup against the Rams. In baseball, Giants took 3 of 4 from the Phillies. San Francisco announced they will retire Will Clark's number 22. The announcement came when many members of the 1989 team were honored yesterday, and one of those players, 1989 NL MVP Kevin Mitchell, will hop on the show to talk about the festivities and memories. That's coming up at 8:30. A's take 2 of 3 from the White Sox, and the Bay Bridge series starts tomorrow. One guy who played for both teams, Barry Zito, will join the Dame Brew Show today at 3 p.m. I'm Anna Kagarakis on the Bay Area's number one sports station. That's 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, here we go. Kevin Mitchell in 11 minutes. Ian Williams at 9:05. Cam Inman at 9:30. It's your boys, Joe Lowendibs. 95.7 The Game. Hope you had a terrific weekend. Breaking news out of the NBA. What do we call it? It's a Woj bomb. It's a Shams. Do we know what the Shams is?
We were going Shams Wow. That was my idea, my contribution.
Shams Wow. We got a Shams Wow here. Wow. Shams Charania. Sources, marquee slate of NBA games on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, January 20th for the 2019-2020 season schedule. Most notably include Houston versus Oklahoma City, the Lakers versus the Celtics, and the Warriors versus Dame Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers.
Nice.
Your instant thoughts.
Hope it's here. Hope that game's here, and I don't think it's been determined from the Shams Wow as to where that location is. But
yeah, this just says Golden State versus Portland, so the assumption is if he knows, he wrote it as Golden State being home, but, you know.
Just the verses. Yeah, I don't think that he knows, and, you know, obviously it got leaked to him. The full schedule released today at noon, I think he said, the full slate. So I hope that game is here in San Francisco at the Chase Center. I almost said Oracle. We'll have to have the Oracle jar next to the Nikki Bosa jar for misnaming the location. But I'm excited about the schedule today at noon, and I hope that game is here in San Francisco.
That's the game that I'm looking forward to. You talked about the slate you just mentioned, Joe. I'm surprised. I thought that was a Christmas Day. I remember we went over that because I think Portland and the Warriors, you're going to get fireworks. Those two teams, you're still going to get fireworks. So I think out of those teams, you're saying which one is the most exciting that you would want to see. By far, it's Portland and the Warriors for simply the fireworks.
So to clarify, we have a Woj bomb, a Shams Wow, and in baseball, a Jeff passing gas.
Yeah, I think those are all still works in progress.
No, they're locked in. They're official.
I don't think I heard the lock, but maybe someone will lock that in. And everybody's got their own thing now. I guess it's a Craig Mish, our friend of the program. It's a Mish missive if he comes out with something, or we can come up with a cockamania reference for anybody who has news.
When's the next time Stanton's a free agent?
Yeah, boy, another 7 or 8 years, I think.
Mish was all over the Stanton stuff.
Yeah, we got the guru breaking news too. I don't know if what we decided a goo nugget was when he
goo
breaks
news.
Yeah,
goo news.
Goo news.
Goo splat. Well, it's like the Woj bomb,
right.
The Shams Wow, right. The Jeff passing gas, the goo splat.
It flows.
Was the report right?
Didn't no, he? No. I think he came up on the losing end of that one.
After splat works, actually.
Yeah, that was Kawhi to the Lakers, I believe, was his. That was actually in the John Curley era. Our producer was his producer at the time.
You got promoted after blowing that one, huh?
Yeah. Wow. My man. Wow. That's a tough one. That's a bad beat for you back there, John. Good hustle, John.
All right. Let's start right here.
Pilar whacks the ball into the right center field gap. That's trouble. Into Triples Alley. Longoria scores. Pilar to third.
Shout out Alex Rodriguez and ESPN for the audio. Your final from Oracle Sunday. San Francisco 9, Philadelphia 6. The Giants take 3 of 4 from the Phillies. And here's where it currently stands in the National League. 19.5 back of the Dodgers, who apparently never lose. But that one's not one we're concerned with. Half game back of Arizona for second place. 4 games back of wild card 1, which is currently occupied by Washington. 3.5 games back of wild card 2, which is currently occupied by St. Louis. doesn't seem all that bad considering how many games are left. However, here are the teams in between the Giants and the Cardinals for that second wild card. Milwaukee, the red-hot New York Mets, Philadelphia, and Arizona. So at one point, you were close in terms of games, but there weren't a lot of teams in between you and them. Now you're relatively close in terms of games, but there are a lot of teams between you and them.
Yes, and teams that appear to be in better shape than you are. The New York Mets is an interesting one because we all were expecting them to trade Syndergaard at the deadline. Not only did they not trade Syndergaard, they added Marcus Stroman, who's come out and pitched well, and you mentioned
and Joe Panik.
Yeah, that's right. They picked up Panik.
He started the rally the other night.
And he's looking better with the Mets, and the Mets have been incredible. And even though they took three or four from Philadelphia, they still trail the Phillies. Washington's a better team. Arizona's comparable. So they're still long odds. 1.4% is the latest FanGraphs for the Giants on their percentage chance to make the playoffs, which is an extreme long shot. But wins like yesterday, even if they do fall short, yesterday's game's one you're going to remember at the end of the season.
Yesterday's game was awesome. Yesterday, that was an awesome baseball game.
Yeah.
Back and forth,
exciting.
Lots of runs, lots of excitement, a lot of guys coming out of nowhere to make plays. Will Smith, first career at bat, two RBI single. That's unbelievable. That was a great baseball game, and Bochy was managing it like it was Game 7 of the World Series. Menez got the hook real quick in that game, and that was the difference between him and Kapler. A seasoned manager who understands the situation and a young manager who's more concerned with how he looks than how he manages. And that might be unfair, but to be honest, if you're going to wear the fancy designer sunglasses, stand up on that step and have that first button undone, you're doing that intentionally. You look in the mirror, you say, this is my look, and you go out there. Boch goes out there, he realizes his starter doesn't have it, and he needs to win the game. And the second that thing got dicey in the second, he got him out of the game. Kapler watches Arrieta get lit up like the 4th of July and says that's okay. Lets him pitch the 2nd and 3rd, and he looks okay. But all broadcast, Rodriguez and Vaskurzian are telling you flat out, the guy is hurt. He's not 100%. He's got issues. And there was the arm slot issue that occurred throughout the game. Phillies take a 5-2 lead. Kapler, of course, okay with that because he's not reading the situation properly. And then the Phils get lit up because he leaves Arrieta in the game. And then, like any one of the 6 billion people walking around the planet today, he goes out and pulls Arrieta after he gets lit up for the 5 runs. Literally anyone can do that.
Right.
You can hire any idiot from any corner of the world to yank Arrieta at that spot. They pay you to yank him before it gets to that spot. And that was the difference in yesterday's game. Bochy managing it like a seasoned pro who wanted to win, and Kapler, who was out there getting a suntan and also trying to collect the check.
Let me ask you guys something. Do you guys think that this is Bochy saying, hey, this is the skipper saying, hey, I'm managing this thing. This is what I want to do. How much is this him for, you know, him thinking, okay, I'm embracing this thing to show that I can adjust with times. How much was this a Farhan thing that Boch still in compliance with? Do you think that this is all Boch on this situation? Or do you guys think this got a little Farhan hand on this by pulling the pitchers right away?
I think this is a classic Boch because you see Jeff Samardzija on Saturday go 8 innings, so you know you've got a fresh pen. And additionally, they have today off. They've got the series with Oakland starting tomorrow, the 2-game set, rather. So you go into yesterday's game thinking, I got a young starting pitcher. I got a rookie. If he gets into any trouble, I know I have absolutely every arm available in the bullpen. And to Joe's point, you see Menez go out there and he struggles and he ends up only getting 5 guys out, but it's okay. He's a young pitcher. You give him the quick hook. Then you go to Jandel Gustav. Then you go to Suarez, a little bit of Gott, maybe sprinkling some Maranta. Maybe Jerez will get in. Then Watson. Then Will Smith. You end up using 8 guys for 9 innings. And that's the piecemeal approach. So I think in yesterday's case,
because of they had a day off, so
right?
Thinking,
and knowing
okay,
full well that he had that in his arsenal because of what Samardzija did, and because of the off day. So as much as the roster construction, and Joe's highlighted it all morning, all the guys who weren't on the opening day roster who produced against Philadelphia yesterday's game, that's a manager's dream. Where you know, get me 2 outs, you get me 3 outs, just get me a couple of outs. You're getting guys up, arms up. Pinch hitters, everybody gets involved, and at the end of the day, you've got a relief pitcher in his first ever at-bat coming through with a clutch hit.
It's not only that. I think there's a little bit of a realization that this is the end of the line. Maybe he wants to go out there, and maybe he realizes, I might not make the playoffs this year. Damn it, this is an opportunity for me to go out and manage. Like, really get in there and manage. The majority of the regular season, you manage one way. The playoffs is a completely different story. I think he looked at this situation as, all right, we had this great run in July, and then we lost what? Was it back-to-back series or three straight?
Three straight.
Lost to Colorado, Washington, and the Phillies.
Yeah.
Okay? So they come back into this series, and that was in a different order, Colorado, Philly, and Washington. They come into this series. They've won two of three. This is a huge game.
Right.
It's a huge game, and for him, he might not be managing in October this year. So he thinks of it as, you know what? We need to win this game. The situation is set up nicely. Samardzija, like you said, going eight and having off Monday. I'm going to manage this game like it's my last. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to manage this thing like it's the playoffs because we need it, because the situation calls for it, and probably a little bit of him says, damn it, I don't have many more of these left. There aren't going to be many more opportunities for him to go out there and manage. We have to remember, and his, you knew it, coming down the end of the road for you, football was reaching the end. Yeah. Any game could have been the last. For him, he realizes there are finite games left in his career. He's going to leave it all out there. And I think yesterday was a situation where it set up perfectly. Win the series, beat a team that you're in competition with for a playoff spot. Your guy gets dicey early. You have the opportunity to go to the pen. It's nationally televised. Everyone's watching you. While the other clown in the other dugout is getting a suntan, you're out there making moves. You're working the chessboard. And all his moves, they're not going to be perfect, but he did what he needed to do to put that team in a position to win. Everyone got so worked up about Will Smith giving up that hit. Oh, it's a blown save.
Yeah.
First of all, didn't he inherit runners in that situation?
Two runners.
So let's calm down on that, first of all. Second of all, he leaves him in, which could have yanked him. Mm-hmm. No, we're going to need him in the ninth.
Right.
So he goes ahead and leaves him in, and the guy drives in two runs. Great job. It's a great job.
Bigger surprise to you, the pitching, the way the rotation went yesterday, or bigger surprise, the bats of the Giants, I mean, by the guys that showed up?
I'd say it's the bats. The fact that they're getting productivity from all these different guys. Guys we never heard of.
Philadelphia rotation stinks. Arrieta stinks, and that bullpen stinks. So that wasn't too surprising. It's not like... Kapler put Nick Pivetta in the game in a high-leverage situation. Nick Pivetta used to be in the rotation, but he wasn't good, so they took him out of the rotation. He used to be a middle reliever, but he wasn't good, so they took him out of that. Yesterday, with the game on the line, Kapler turns to his literal worst option, and the guy comes in and gets lit up. And then you sit there, and it's like, well, you know, we'll try to get him tomorrow. That's the difference.
He would have been better off going with Nick Pivetta, or Dick Pivetta, as opposed to Nick Pivetta. I blew my own joke there.
It couldn't have gone worse.
My joke or the outing?
The outing. The joke is, you know.
My man.
All right. Dial pad guest line. World Series champ, 1989 National League MVP, former San Francisco Giant. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him, you love him. The great Kevin Mitchell joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kevin, good morning and thanks for your time. How are you?
Gentlemen, good morning. You know, I know y'all like to catch a man in the morning while he yawning, so.
tell us about what yesterday was like at the park. It was awesome that it worked out to be an ESPN Sunday night baseball game, a great atmosphere, playoff-like intensity between the two managers and how they moved the chess pieces around the board. But what was it like to be part of the big reunion?
Man, it was a beautiful thing, man. I tell you, the Giants are first class. I mean, I just love coming up and then, especially seeing the guys that you used to play with, that was gratifying. So,
how big was it to hear the news that Will Clark's 22 old deuce is going to be retired? That's got to be pretty special for those of you guys who played with Will.
Oh, no doubt. You know, what I was teasing him about yesterday when he got on the podium, I said, man, you should at least thank me first. I hit behind you. but it was all good. I was happy for him, and he came up in the box, and we sat down and talked for a long time yesterday till it was time to go, and we just caught up with a lot of stuff. So, you know, it was just good to sit down and enjoy his presence around me, and it was a blessing to see everybody yesterday.
Kevin, take us back down to memory lane, you know, in 89 with the big earthquake. Where were you? What was that emotions? What was going through your mind when all that was taking place?
Guys, I was in right field talking to Tony Phillips. May he rest in peace right now. And me and Tony was just sitting out there talking about the atmosphere out here, how it was just alive. And we turned around and saw they was playing that song, We Will Rock You.
Sure.
And, you know, you hear that, you think people are stamping their feet. So right. We turned around and saw the TVs all going haywire And we knew something was going on, but then we saw the people in the right field bleachers, and there was a panic then. So we knew something was going on. And when I went inside, Willie Mays just told me the bridge had just fell. So we knew it was something that was serious and major that we had to deal with right away.
Wow.
Kevin Mitchell, World Series champ with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. How awesome was it yesterday getting the news that Will Clark's number would be retired by the Giants next season?
Well, it was a surprise to everybody on the field when we got on the field. I'm thinking it was a big surprise to him, the way he took it. But it was he deserved it. He deserved every bit of it, man. You know, I played with the guy. You know, and I love, you know, in a war, I would love to go to war with that guy because I know what he's going to do. But, you know, I'm so happy for him. The things are going positive for him. Like I said, we sat down and talked yesterday and how the Giants are blessing him working there. And I know he's going to be a good asset there for that club.
And he's obviously had a big impact on this club in the ways that he's been able to do it from his coaching and his special assistant work. When you look at this ball club and you see how they have a lot of unheralded pieces, yet they continue to pull together, do you see similarities from a chemistry standpoint from this team to your team in 89?
Well, you know, I'm not in the clubhouse. That's where it all starts first. So, you know, I see it on the field, how they're having fun, but that's the main thing what you have to do. I mean, I go to the games in San Diego when they come there, and I'm that close where I can see them, and I can tell on the bench that they're having a lot of fun no matter what happens. I really think this team right here, the way they started, I believe that they can turn a lot of things around. I really believed in them because I'm a Giant. You know, all the teams that I ever played with, I'm going to always be a San Francisco Giant.
Sure.
You know, my heart bleeds orange and black. So, but the guys on that team, Pablo's a good friend of mine, and I just love Pablo. I know you got two big. When I see him, you got two big guys hugging each other. It's gonna cause some friction there, but you know, we are. You know, I'm his good luck charm. He tells me, Poppy. So, but I think they're gonna turn a lot of stuff around. They're gonna turn a lot of eyes because it ain't how you start out. It's how you finish.
No question. Well, with that being said, you've played for both these amazing organizations, the Oakland Athletics and also the Giants. What's that series like, and how do you see this? This is that Battle of the Bay. You see these two teams fighting for that wild card spot. How do you see this, and what was it like playing for both these teams?
Well, I enjoy, you know, I'm always, like I said, I'm always going to be a Giant.
Sure.
I was thankful that Billy Beane gave me a job over there. I wasn't there long, you know, and situations happen. So, you know, that's part of the game. Now, it's understandable. So, you know, I grew up with Billy Beane in San Diego. So, you know, played against him in football and everything. And we played in the same organization with the New York Mets, who was roommates and everything else. But, Oakland A's got a solid team. Bo Melvin got them going over there, you know. And, you know, I'm a good friend of Bo Melvin's, too. So, and Matt Williams. You know, Matty, the big Marine, I love him. But, you know, one team's got to do something, you know, and hopefully it's the San Francisco Giants.
Kevin Mitchell with us here on 95.7 The Game. Where do you stand on the fans who wear the split hat or the split jersey for the Bay Bridge Series game? A half Giant hat, a half A hat, acceptable or not?
I love the camaraderie here, you know, between the two teams. You got people that love the Giants and got people that love the A's, so why not have one on each side? You know, I know it's a lot of front runners out there, but you got to deal with it.
Yeah, and I think the front runners mainly are going to the side of the Giants right now, but if you think back to 1989 and you see the way that series went with the earthquake, do you feel like if there was no quake that things would have been different, that the Giants would have been the winners in 89?
You know what? Let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you, like I tell everybody else, if probably that wouldn't happen. I felt that we had a chance against that powerhouse over there, the Bash Brothers. I really do. I really think we had a chance with them if that wouldn't even happen because they was able to come back and throw Dave Stewart, you know? And, you know, Dave's going to get his. I think it kind of messed up a lot of our players' minds and their families. I mean, it hit a lot of people in the Bay Area. So, you know, I think by us still playing, coming back and playing, it kind of gave the city a little more, little bit of lift. I think people are still battling over that earthquake, you know, and it did a lot of damage.
World Series champ, 1989 NL MVP, former San Francisco Giant, the great Kevin Mitchell with Joe Low and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kevin, we know you're a busy guy, but we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, enjoy, gentlemen. Enjoy. I'm headed home right now. We'll go play me some golf, and hopefully I won't over par.
We appreciate it. Thanks again. Good luck out there.
All right. You guys take care, gentlemen. Take care.
Imagine the odds and everything that needs to line up for that earthquake situation to take place. The fact that it happened here in the Bay Area during the World Series, in which not only did the town with two baseball teams get one of them there, but you got both of them there, and a game was played that night. Like, everything that has to fall in line for that moment to take place. Earthquakes, random, predictable, I don't know. You got people out there that are trying to predict them,
right?
I know that. But, like, the randomness of the earthquake, where it happens, because while it's popular here, it can happen in a lot of regions around the world, happening here on a night in which there's not only a local baseball game played, but it's a local baseball game between the two local teams, not just one, and it happens to be for the World Series.
And it happens right before first pitch. And
right. Wasn't that morning.
No, and you're a big data stats guy, but so think about it in these terms. Think about the 1989 earthquake, magnitude of about a 7. If you think about since 89 till now, how many earthquakes in the Bay Area have we had that have even been a 6 or higher? And I don't have the exact number, but it's probably 3 or maybe 4 earthquakes, period. How many times have the Giants and A's met in the World Series since the Giants have been out here? That's it. That's the one time, let alone, like you mentioned, the fact that you've got 4, maybe 7 games in a World Series of all the minutes in the day to have it happen before the first pitch in that game between those teams and an earthquake of that magnitude. The odds of that are in the trillions, honestly.
I don't even know if they exist.
Right.
Like, so
the quadrillions, maybe.
Everything you laid out was a moonshot. It was just moonshot after moonshot after moonshot. The idea of the two local baseball teams just getting there. Just that concept
right.
alone.
And think about it if it was like just a, quote, normal quake. If it was a quake like we had a few weeks ago out in Blackhawk, it was a 4.2 and it was downgraded to a 4.0. That's a little rumbler, and it might have been a news nugget at the bottom of a game story, but this was a major calamitous earthquake of massive proportions to happen right before the World Series game between two local teams. The odds are in the trillions, at least.
Over the 4-game series between the Giants and the Phillies, the Giants hit 8 home runs, 2 home runs per game at Oracle Park. Of those, 7 were hit by guys who were not worth, or excuse me, who were not with the big league club on opening day. Evan Longoria is the only guy in the series against Philadelphia who hit a home run who was with the team on opening day. Yaz wasn't, he hit 2. Pilar wasn't, he hit 2. Ricard wasn't, he hit 1. Steven Vogt wasn't. I believe he was in the minor league system and came up at the beginning of May. He hit that Bonzian shot a third of the way out into McCovey Cove. That was an incredible home run. And then Scooter Gennett hit one yesterday, and he put his in the water as well. Do we revisit the idea that the fences need to be moved in? I think on one hand, you realize that you want more home runs. Yesterday's game was a hell of a lot better than Saturday's. Both were wins. Samardzija looked fantastic on Saturday. It's not to take anything away from him. But the 3-1 game, we've had a lot of those. That's not the game that brings a lot of people to the TV to watch the highlights. The 9-6 game that goes back and forth with runs aplenty and big-time moonshots, that's going to get the people out there. That got people excited. That was a good game. ESPN got lucky they got a game like that for Sunday Night Baseball, all things considered with these two teams and the location. So do you still have to revisit the idea of moving in the fences? Because the guys that are mashing are guys that weren't a part of the home run problem last year and prior.
Yeah, I don't think you have to move the fences in. I've never been a believer of that. The only thing that would possibly sway me would be the idea of getting the bullpens off the field for, quote, safety purposes. And that ultimately will be the excuse they use if and when they do move that right center triples alley in. It's going to be, oh, we want to get the bullpens off the field. It's not because our offense doesn't hit at home. And oh, by the way, they've hit this year 47 home runs as a team at home, and they've hit 79 home runs on the road. So not quite double, but significantly more on the road. So it's not so much a ballpark factor as it is an offensive problem for this Giants team.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to move him in, nor do I think they should. I think when you saw yesterday that there's guys that have the power to get it over, you know, get it out of the ballpark. I just think it's a situation you just got to make sure you get the right guys if that's what you're searching for. And does that necessarily mean that you can't score runs and manufacture runs if you don't hit home runs? No. You get guys on the bases and get guys on the bags, and then, you know, you continue to hit for average and get guys around the pond, and they end up scoring. So is it more exciting for a grand slam home run? Absolutely. But it's also pretty exciting when you see teams that work it out. They get some nice doubles and triples and things happen, and it makes guys score as well. So I think that has nothing to do with necessarily the home runs. I think you just got to be consistent all the way around.
I think it highlights the fact that this has just been a team that can't hit home runs. That's what it's been for 3 years. And now you got guys with power, and the guys with power are showing you that power. Mike Yastrzemski has no problem hitting in this yard. None whatsoever. Now, if the fences were in a little bit, he'd probably have a couple extra home runs from the weekend because he smashed two off the wall over the course of this series. But now that you've got a new-look lineup that actually puts some pop into the ball, you're watching balls fly out of the yard. You'll notice I didn't name Brandon Belt or Brandon Crawford or Buster Posey or any of the regulars in this list of home runs because they didn't hit any. They don't hit home runs. But all the new-look guys are having no problem with it. I think they are doing it. They haven't made it official yet, but they are doing it. Kruk and Kipe have been talking about it all year.
But even when they went on the runs, Dibs, when they won it, who was the big bat? Who was hitting 50 or 40? I mean, it wasn't like they were winning titles. They still win championships. It wasn't like they had someone going yard all the time.
But they weren't winning with power.
Right.
You need to win with power now. That's the thing. It's a different era now. 10, 12, and 14 was what? Pitching and defense.
Right.
Great bullpen, and it worked out really well for him. But now, in order to get there, look at all the teams in contention and where they are in terms of home runs. I'd imagine if I bring it up, there's a correlation between the teams hitting the most home runs and then the teams that find themselves at the top of the standings.
Yeah, no doubt. And as you look it up, I'll just point out the differential low for them as a home run hitting team. They've hit 47 home runs at home. They've given up 71 home runs at home. That's minus 24. On the road, they've actually hit 79 home runs and given up 94, so that's a minus 15 on the road. So they've been a better road-hitting team than a home-hitting team, and they've pitched actually about the same home and road from a home run yielding standpoint.
So pretty much we devalue in pitching now. Is it safe to say that pitching is not valued as much as it used to be?
You devalue average. A guy who hits 300, who cares? Who cares? If he has power, great. But if he has power, he can hit what's Joey Gallo hitting right now? Joey Gallo was the first guy in Major League Baseball history to reach 100 home runs before he reached 100 singles. Think about that.
Wow.
There's a guy in baseball who has 100 home runs before he had 100 singles. Average is what you don't value. You still value pitching. Pitching definitely comes at a premium. But you have to figure out what type of pitching.
Right.
Who are you going to pay?
Starting pitching has been devalued, to Joe's point, other than the true aces. And you mentioned Jake Arrieta yesterday, who's supposed to be an ace. He goes three innings and gives up five earned runs. Is that really worth $25 million a year? You get 34 starts from a guy all season long, and if 10 of them are going to be outings where he doesn't even go five innings, all of a sudden starting pitching is something you can kind of devalue, especially if you have a lot of arms in the pen, which is what Farhan Zaidi's trying to do with this team. You look at yesterday, all the guys that Bochy was able to throw out there, plus they have more in the minors. They have a lot of bullpen arms right now.
How much does that work, starters. Is that something that you believe that is going to work and be consistent? Can you win like that consistently, in your opinion?
Well, you look at it like this. Back in the day, starters, how many complete games did Steve Carlton have that year with the Phillies when he made it? He had like
15?
It was an insane amount. The data shows you that the longer you're in the game and the more often a batter gets an opportunity to face you, the better the batter's chances become.
Right.
You have a better chance of getting him out the first time you face him than the third time. So a lot of teams now have finally realized that. So they're pulling the starters before they get to their third trip through the order, and then they're turning it over to the bullpen, giving you something new to work on, rather than facing the same guy for a third time who you may have figured out.
Okay.
That's what they're doing. That's always was Jeff Samardzija's problem for the longest time. He might be able to get you four or five innings, but once he got to that third spin through, it was a problem. Jake Peavy, I remember his last year with the team. His third spin through was always a disaster. And Boach believed more in leaving some of these guys in because it was more traditional. But how many guys truly exist right now where you'd be willing to, A, pay him big money, and B, leave him in into the seventh or eighth? Even Bumgarner doesn't go deep anymore, right? I mean, Scherzer's a guy that you probably let keep going.
Yeah.
Verlander's a guy who's right now in true form. Walker Buehler is the type of guy that you might let run deep, but they don't do it with Chris Sale much in Boston, I don't think, because he's been a disaster in some of these scenarios. There's a small, fractional percentage of guys. I don't know if the Yankees have a single guy that they would want pitching into the seventh or eighth inning come playoff time. Severino, when he was on his game, maybe, but he was banged up most of the year. The Cubs don't have one. They're not going to leave John Lester out there for eight innings. Madden might because he has some old-school tendencies, but that would get them in a lot of trouble. Here are your teams in terms of home runs this year, right? This is just team home runs. Number one, Minnesota, top of the division with Cleveland. Number two, the Yanks, top of the division. Number three, Houston, top of the division. Number four, the Dodgers, top of the division. Number five, Atlanta, top of the division. Number six, Milwaukee, right there in the playoff hunt. Number seven, Boston, right there in the playoff hunt. Number eight, the Cubs, top of the division. Number nine, Oakland, right there in the playoff hunt. That's not luck. That's not
correlation. We're waiting for a non-contender as you go down the list.
I'm going to start now at 30 and work my way up from the bottom. Number 30, Miami. Number 29, Detroit.
Ew.
Number 28, Kansas City. Number 27, San Francisco. Number 26, Pittsburgh. Number 25, the White Sox. The Orioles are down there.
How many Giants have? They got 126, is that right?
Total 126. They are one above Kansas City for 27th.
And if you look at the Giants' home run totals year over year, this is a huge increase for the Giants. Even though they're still bottom five in the league, they are trending in the right direction. Now, they're not going to hit 272 home runs or whatever the record was that was set last year, but they're going to be a team that hits probably more than one homer a game for the first time in years.
So you don't even want you're not necessarily looking for a guy with average. You're looking for a guy that can hit the ball deep. So you don't mind the strikeouts. You're just saying I want big bats.
Chris Davis is a perfect example. He'll give you 40 home runs. He'll hit what does he hit 3 years in a row? 247? Is that the number? 247? That's what you want. It's about launch angle. So now they figured out they're teaching guys to swing so that the trajectory of the ball is going to go up. When you're in little league, the first thing they teach is the level swing. They want you to be able to put it on the ground. They don't want you to pop up. Learn how to hit grounders. Learn how to drive the ball. Now it's about the guys who are swinging on the upward plane. That's why the two stats you always get after a guy's at bat, and you saw it yesterday on the broadcast, number one, exit velocity. How hard is the ball coming off the bat? The harder it comes off the bat, the further it can fly. And number two, the launch angle. Because if the launch angle isn't, I guess, steep enough, it doesn't have a chance to catch the proper elevation to leave the yard. Those are the guys you want. Guys that can mash. You'll gladly take a 1-for-4 night if that one hits a home run, right? It's better than a 2-for-4 night with two singles. You're going to need other guys to get on board. Like it comes down to the ability to string hits together, too. Like when you just look at this concept of how would you rather have 9 hits? If you have 9 hits in a game, do you want 1 hit per inning or do you want 9 hits in a row in 1 inning? You would want the 9 hits in a row in 1 inning because it's going to guarantee you runs.
Right.
So this is how you're building your team right now. You're going to invest less in starting pitching because they're not going to go as deep into games. You're going to dedicate more roster spots to the bullpen because those guys are going to need to pitch more innings because they're coming into games earlier than ever before. It's not a coincidence. This year you're getting more reliever innings thrown than in any year in MLB history. Not a coincidence. Balls are juiced, so take advantage of that. Find guys who can hit home runs and specifically guys who can do it for cheap. You can teach guys this. They're teaching them launch angle. That's exactly what happened with the Cubs last year. The Cubs fired. At the end of the season, they were determining whether or not they're going to fire Joe Maddon, right? And they're probably going to do it after this season if they don't run deep. Now, there's a lot going on there that we don't need to worry about now. But someone's head needed to roll last season for the Cubs. The head that rolled was the hitting coach. Why? Because he doesn't believe in launch angle and all that other stuff. He wasn't teaching him that. So they ran him. They brought in a new guy. Oh, hey, anyone notice Jason Hayward's having an incredible season? The guy they dumped all that money into stunk, couldn't even hit 200, was terrible for the Cubs. Now this year he's having this renaissance. And everyone's like, hey, look at Jason Hayward. Well, yeah, you brought in the right coach to teach him how to hit the ball, right? This is how the game is played nowadays. So you got to figure out what people are, find out what the rules are that matter, the stats that matter, and develop your team around it. You see it in the NFL too. You got these teams. This is the debate you and I always get into. And it's never meant as disrespect, but the idea of, no, you pay the running back. All right. But that money can't go anywhere else. You know, this is a salary cap league. You got to figure out where you want to pay guys right now. And it comes down to the teams that have high-priced running backs. Let's see what happens with the Rams. They're lucky that they were able to pay Gurley because they're not paying the quarterback. But when they pay the quarterback and they pay the D-tackle and they pay the running back, how good do you think the Rams are going to be? You already saw a big departure of talent this offseason. That's going to continue. This is their window. Seattle's window was awesome while Russell was cheap. They could pay everyone else. Now they paid Russell. Now you see the team coming down. That's how you got to figure out exactly how the rules work and what everyone else is doing. This is why if nothing else, you should be highly confident in the direction Farhan Zaidi is taking this team, because he understands this. He understands the direction of baseball. He understands the players, the value, exactly what they're worth. That's the one thing people don't get in betting. When it comes to sports betting, you're not betting jerseys. Jerseys mean nothing. The best sports bettors in the world, they can't even tell you the names of the players on the team. They don't know who the guys are. They don't care. They're betting numbers. They're betting prices. This team in this game is worth this price. And if that price is off, it's worth a bet. And if it's off big, it's worth a big bet. That's what's happening now. How do you value Bryce Harper? There are some teams that were definitely willing to go out there and spend $30-plus million a year on him. There are other teams that look at him and say, that production is not going to be worth $30 million. The A's, there's a reason they don't go out and spend tons of money on big-name free agents. They have a manner in which they do things, and it works out well for them in the regular season. But you see it kind of come back to get them in the playoffs every now and again.
Yeah.
Part of that is the fact that the AL is completely loaded.
And part of that, too, is you need to have a big-game pitcher, and I don't know if it'll be Mike Fiers or Homer Bailey, if they get into a wild-card scenario where they need to get that win. You mentioned the Giants and Farhan Zaidi and what he's trying to do. Going back, 133 homers last year, 128 the year before, 130 the year before that. Those are all obviously less than one per game. Right now they've had 126. They're on pace to hit 175 for the season, which would be an increase of 40 home runs year over year. And if you look at the names of the guys, as you mentioned, you're throwing out Yastrzemski and Dickerson and Solano and Duggar and a lot of other guys who aren't known for their power yet. This team, even though they don't hit a ton of home runs, they hit more than last year because a lot of guys are going to give you 8, 12, 14. So you don't really have a classic slugger per se, but you've added some guys who at least have the potential to hit home runs.
Just look at the moves, the moves that are perceived to be more minor. Backup catcher, Hundley, right? When he was with the team, it was okay. Look at Stephen Vogt. Stephen Vogt's on a tear right now. Nice. Stephen Vogt, you like seeing him behind the dish. He might not be the better defensive catcher, but do you feel bad when Posey's not in the lineup and Vogt's catching? Do you think to yourself, man, like back in the day, 3, 4, 5 years ago, if Posey had the night off and you saw what was behind the plate,
Eli Whiteside,
like,
or
this is going to be a little bit dicey tonight. You see Vogt back there, you're like, we got a better chance of driving in more runs. That home run was not a fluke on Friday night. He buried that thing out there. That's what he brings to the plate. He was running hot through Colorado and everything else.
Right.
When he's in the lineup, you have a better lineup than when Buster Posey's
And he has the two lineups now that he can roll out because he has so many interchangeable pieces to where when you face a right-hand pitcher, you can rest Buster and you can put the left-handed Vogt in there. You got Belt, who's a lefty. Crawford's a lefty. And you can start to really fill out your lineup of left-handed hitters. And when the other team throws a lefty pitcher, now all of a sudden Vogt can sit. And maybe you can, you know, move Buster over to first base if need be. You got more roster flexibility.
Well, you guys help me out.
Vogt was playing left field the other night trying to dive for balls.
Dude, why not?
The big fella, he's been waddling out there. But you guys help me out because you guys talk about how the A's, you talk about needing a frontline pitcher, especially for a one-game series. So the balance of, I know, understand now that, hey, it's home runs, it's launch angles. You want to make sure you got a team that can go yard instead of just the singles and the doubles. I get that now. But you talk about also that in a one-game series, though, you do need to have a somewhat decent pitcher because it's a one-game series. So that's when you think, okay, I got to make sure that I have some balance. So what's the balance when you're talking about giving away and how far do you go?
Well, if you're in a wild card game, one game to settle it all. Last year, the A's went with an opener. They went with a reliever to start the game, Liam Hendricks, who, by the way, is your closer now because Blake Treinen's had some troubles. But you didn't have a reliable enough ace to put out there, so you had to kind of piecemeal it. If you look at the teams against whom you're going to be competing, looking at Houston, for example, you know you've got nasty pitchers there. They've got frontline starters who are going to give you problems not only once through the order, but twice and maybe three times through. You're talking about Verlander and Garrett Cole. These guys are nasty. If you're the A's, you don't have one pitcher, Fiers or Homer Bailey. These aren't guys who are going to go out there and absolutely mow. So you do want to have a powerful lineup, but you also, it would be nice to have at least one guy, if you're in an elimination game, you could throw out there and say, I like our chances through six innings.
Also, there's something to be said about this sport, just like with golf. These guys are creatures of habit, right? Very particular. Step into the box, ball one, step out, undo the gloves, redo the helmet, adjust the jock, do everything and step back in. Everything's very particular. So you come to playoff time, you're one big game, you want a big game guy. Like Justin Verlander, it's no surprise. If the Astros find themselves in a one-game situation, it's Verlander. Why? He's been there. He's not going to wake up and feel different. the A's last year, you take a guy from the bullpen. It's like, hey, by the way, so all your career, you've been coming out of the bullpen late in games. We're going to go ahead and throw you out to start the game. Biggest game of the season, biggest game of your career. Oh, by the way, it's against the Yankees in the Bronx in October, and it doesn't go well. Now, there's a mental aspect to that as well. That doesn't show up in analytics a lot of the times. That's one of those things that's discredited. When you just work with a spreadsheet, a lot of times you don't bring a guy's mindset into play. And that was a very difficult situation for someone who didn't pitch in that situation. You tried something completely new, whereas who went out there for the Yanks? Severino. Did he not mow down the A's? He mowed them down. What did Severino do exactly 1 year before that? He went out in the one-game play-in, and he got lit up by Minnesota. The Yanks still went on to win that game, but that was the biggest spot of Severino's career, it was the wild card game, and he got destroyed. Now he has the experience under his belt. He goes out there the next year. He mows down the opposing lineup. He had, you know, it's mentality to it. A lot of that doesn't get factored in. All right, Ian Williams, we got to talk about the stock up, stock down, everything we saw from Saturday night's game at Levi's. He's coming up. Cam Inman, big football hour in store. It's Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.